On Sunday, April 22nd at 11 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl will feature pianist, composer, educator, and NEA jazz master, Barry Harris. That's Sunday, April 22nd at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. And you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Sugar in My Bowl, coming up next.
I want a little sugar in my bowl. I want a little sweetness down in my soul. I could stand some loving, oh, so bad. I feel so funny, I feel so sad. I want a little steam on my clothes. Maybe I can fix things up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I need some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar in my bowl. You've been acting different, I've been told. Soothe me, I want some sugar in my bowl. I want some steam on my clothes. Maybe I can fix things.
Well, I'm going to fade out our dear Nina Simone, to get ready for Barry Harris. We need the time, so let's use it. Stay tuned. This is WBAI New York 99.5. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. Barry Harris is my guest. Stay tuned.
In my bowl. Thank you.
My name is Joyce Jones, and I'm here with
Barry Harris.
Thank you, Barry Harris, for joining us.
Glad to be here with you.
In this diner.
Yes, fun. This is the fun. One can speak openly.
Right. You know. Let's see, you were born in Detroit.
Oh, yes. That's my place.
Everyone makes a point of mentioning how you were born in Detroit.
Yeah, because, well, you know, a lot of us came from Detroit at the same time to New York. And it's odd, too. When we finally came to New York, a lot of us came together. And it really was weird. We came together, we separated, and went different ways, and didn't see each other all the time either, you know. But we all had different paths in New York, you know.
I understood that when you were in Detroit, you really would shed it.
Oh, yeah.
You worked really hard.
I would shed it here.
Yeah.
In New York, too.
Yeah.
I had a building on 46th Street where I had a key to a building.
Mm-hmm.
And I could go in that building, go up on the third or the fourth floor. I don't remember which one. There was a piano up there. I'd practice all day and have a ball. You know, piano players knew where to find me.
Well, you were already playing in Detroit.
Oh, yeah.
Before you came here.
Oh, sure.
And I understood that people came to Detroit to find you.
Yeah, some did. That's true. What happened was they came to Detroit. I'm beginning to think now that they did really come to find me. I didn't think that at first. And see, I was being flown to New York to make records before I came to live in New York.
I see.
You know, so it was quite a little different kind of thing. I made a couple of Mac records with Thad Jones and Art Farmer, Don Byrd, and then with Lee Morgan, you know, quite a few people, you know, right in there.
Now, one of the recordings that you did with Donald Byrd, it was First Flight, and it included a song that you wrote for Yusuf Lateef.
Yeah, it's a slow one.
It was called Yusuf.
And now we'd like to bring to you an original written by Yusuf Lateef, titled Yusuf.
Mm-hmm.
There's one take of it, but it's with Lewis Hayes. Lewis Hayes had a record day, and we did it, but it wasn't called Yusuf. What was it called? I Need You or something like that.
On this take, it has Donald Byrd on trumpet, Yusef Lateef tenor sax, you on piano, Bernard McKinney on euphonium.
Oh yeah, we recorded this in Detroit.
Yeah, and Alvin Jackson
on bass.
Right, and Frank Gant.
Frank Gant on drums. Right. Yeah, this is long. You didn't say when this was recorded.
1955, August 23rd.
Yeah, this was before the Lewis Hayes one. That Yusuf was a beautiful. That's the tune that every time Milt Jackson saw me, he would mention that tune. He loved that tune. He really liked that song.
How did you meet Yusef Lateef? How did you wind up working together?
I talked to Yusef Lateef yesterday.
Oh, excellent. He's been on our show as well.
I made sure all the musicians said hello to Yusef. You know? I don't know how to. He came back to Detroit. You know, he wasn't in Detroit all the time. He came back to Detroit.
Uh-huh.
And I guess we all started playing together. That's how we started. We had a job at the Bluebird, which was the best joint in Detroit. And Yusef and Kiana, myself, we started rehearsing all the time. So we had to make up things to rehearse, you know. So I started making up rules. Let's practice these things and see what happens.
Uh-huh.
So we started practicing. And people started coming. You know, I even had Coltrane drop in. I gave them all the rules.
Wow.
So I had people coming from everywhere. Then I ended up, I made records before I came to New York. Then I came to New York. Really, we made a lot of records, though. You know, it's nothing like today. Back in those days, we made more records than months in the year. I'm talking about 14.
Wow.
That's how we made a living. It wasn't from gigs, it was from making those records. You know, we made quite a few records. I know it was one year, I know for sure that I made more records than months in the year. You know, so it was quite a few records. We don't make anything like that now. Most of the people nowadays make their own records.
Right.
Look, the record stores are gone.
Right.
You know, so a lot of people make their own records, and see what you do, you carry your records around with you.
Right.
Like I was in Washington, they asked for, don't you have any records? I don't have any records. You don't carry those records around? Lord have mercy. Don't want to look at carry the records around in Japan?
Yeah.
Man, I couldn't do that.
You know, most people are walking with their CDs.
Yeah. Oh, CDs, yeah.
Right.
Oh, you're right. Boy, that's too much. I say, not for me. But I should have some bring to a place, you know.
Well, I know it's like with poets. They have to travel with their books.
Yeah.
You know, and once they finish presenting somewhere, they then end it off with selling their books.
That's right.
So it looks like, you know,
artists
have to do it now.
Oh, that's exactly right. That's exactly the way you do it. The poets did it a long time ago.
Right.
They wrote poems and put them in the book. A friend of mine, he had his book out way before I had got all this stuff together, you know.
For a CD?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
He had it out.
Technology is now that people can sell the recording of a concert after the concert.
That's true.
That's right. Now it's gotten that tough. It's tough.
So now that you've implanted yourself into the exchange, could you introduce yourselves?
Okay.
I'm Vince Evans.
Okay.
I'm Richard Clemens, one of Barry's students.
Okay. And Vince, you're one of Barry's students?
Yeah, we're all his adopted sons.
You can speak for yourself.
Well,
I'm
an adopted son, but he threatens daily to tear up my adoption papers.
What do you play?
I play at the piano. I try to mimic this master.
And you play?
I play piano. And I've been studying with Barry quite a few years. And like Vince say, I try to do everything he does on the piano.
They're being really nice. They're being exceptionally nice.
So tell me about, because we really actually didn't talk about the time that you played with Yusef Lizzo.
We went on the road together, you know, with the band. We ended up in California, you know. Oh, man, we recorded out there, too, you know. Yusef became more like, he added things, you know, he added more Eastern type thing.
As a matter of fact, that is probably my favorite recording that you did with him, the Eastern sounds.
Yeah.
Because there's
Spartacus.
Yes, theme from Spartacus and The Robe.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the way you played on that because your touch was really light.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that what you were directed to do with that?
No, that's just how it came out. That's how. Because, you know, I can't even remember that Spartacus.
WBAI New York. WBAI, New York.
A lot of people like that solo I took on that.
Exactly.
You know, but I can't remember a thing about it. I'd have to hear it and say, oh, well, that's me.
Those are actually two of my favorites.
Yeah, you know. Suddenly I've had this notion that I have to keep up with him right now. Because, you know, Yusuf is 91.
Yes.
I call Yusuf, and I have this feeling that I'm supposed to call him all the time now. Because, you know, and he's there at the house, at his place, and he always answers the phone, so I know he's just sitting there, you know. I even tried to get these people here to celebrate his 90th. The kidney bean took longer?
Apparently, you know, that's always the case. Thank you.
Kidney bean service.
All right, I guess we can continue. So how did you wind up playing with Cannonball Adderley? What was that like? I mean, did he come to you and say, come record with me?
How did I do in that band? I think they came for me.
Okay.
But that was really later, because that happened in the 60s,
no,
1960. I joined Cannon and his brother, Matt, you know, Lewis Hayes on drums, Sam Jones bass. It's weird, too, because one day I went to, they were having a thing, Charlie Parker, showing Charlie Parker the tapes and things. And then they showed a thing of Cannonball, and I looked at it, I said, oh, that looks like the man I was with. And sure enough, it was me on piano. Because I didn't see it at first.
Right.
I saw it later on. Yeah, I was on piano. I said, nah, those people really know what they're doing. They know, they record stuff. You know nothing about it.
Right.
You know, that's what's going on now in the world. It's really terrible.
Yeah, performances.
Only the little things like this, little things like that.
Like my recorder.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, these are good recorders, too. You know, when people have you, you find records all over the world that you never made.
So I understand the people who inspired you include Art Tatum.
Yeah.
And Charlie Parker.
Nope, well, you missed one.
Yes, I'm sure. What's the one?
Bud Powell.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But Charlie Parker, in listening to your playing, it's like you're Charlie Parker on keys.
Yeah, almost like that. Well, I switched from Bud Powell. At one time in my life, I learned from Bud Powell.
Okay.
You know, see, the whole idea, there were no schools then.
Right.
You learn from records and stuff.
Right.
And so I learned from Bud Powell. But then I switched from Bud Powell because Bud got beat up bad by cops and things like that. And so he was sort of off. But then I started listening to Bird,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I listen more to Charlie Parker then.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like a combination guy. I'm Bud Powell, Charlie Parker. You know, like a twofold.
Right.
You know. I play things that Bud Powell would never play.
Mm.
And I play things that Charlie Parker would never play.
Right.
You know, it's like that kind of thing.
Right.
But one thing about it is, not to just play what you learn, is to learn from what you hear, to learn how to play different things off of what they did. That's what we have to learn to do. You know? Right now, we have to find a way to keep the music going.
Right.
Because the music is dying. know, we don't have any young audience. You know, we have a few young fellows from other countries. They're more intent on playing the music than we are here in our country. I get mad because I can't seem to make my people. But see, when I go overseas, I teach for a week. When I'm here, I just teach for one day. And really, that's not the best way.
Right.
So I can't get my people to play. Some understand, you know. These guys, they're pianists, so they gigs already. So they understand.
Right.
But it's hard, you know.
Right. Well, I suspect one of the things that makes it harder is the fact that the music is, when you were playing, it was dance music.
Yeah. Right.
And every, you know, people went to see you play because they were also going to dance.
That's right.
It was part and parcel.
No, you're right.
And now it's, you know, people are sitting.
Yeah. And just sit and just sitting.
Yeah.
I decided that one has to communicate with them. We go to a gig, we don't announce the tunes. We don't look any different than the people. Mm-hmm. You know, see, before with Cannonball, we'd go to Philadelphia and we'd buy suits alike.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when we came on the stand, we were different from the other people, you know. See, the musician has to learn to do that more often. We have to be different. They don't do it now. People get on the stage now with blue jeans, holes in them. You know, even though it's different now, got another young group now that wear ties. They dress up. You know, mm-hmm. they're young. It's a group. You
right.
know. That's sort of more like Gwen Marcello's group of people. You know, there's some young group from New Orleans and different places.
Right, Nicholas Payton.
Yeah, they dress up. You know, and we really are supposed to dress up. You know. I believe in that.
So do you think that the club owners will move the tables so the people can dance again, or it's too late for that?
It's late now. It would be nice.
Yeah.
That's why it's good to go down to 46th Street. You have to go to Swing 46. There's a couple places where big bands play, and people go there to dance. See, most of these young people, they don't know anything about that kind of dancing.
Right.
You know, you look around at them. The reason they don't know is the parents are negligent. See, the parents are doing the same dances as the young people. That's the drag. Rather than the parents saying, oh, that ain't the way I dance. We have somebody hold them.
Mm.
You know.
Well, see, that's the thing, too. I often think that there should be room for more types of this music. I mean, there's the music that, you know, Charlie Parker was playing and everybody was playing then for the bands, you know, during the swing bands and what have you, that sort of thing. There was bop, there was, you know,
yeah.
but people were dancing.
Yeah.
But then there was, like, the stuff that Miles was doing in the late 60s, early 70s.
Some you could dance to.
And some of it you can dance to, exactly.
Yeah.
And
well, I tell you, part of our fault is, see, when we were young, we brought along our contemporaries.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have to play instruments, we brought them along. Because they like to dance, of course, like you're saying. These young people, they brought nobody along with them. But they took the music out of school. You know, that's the drag. See, where we make our biggest mistake is we've taken all the music out of the schools. We have warehouses full of musical instruments. Just think of that. In some schools, they're underneath the principal's office, there are instruments rotting. Where do people learn how to play new instruments? Especially black folks.
Right.
You know, you think about it. Most of us learn to play an instrument in school. Not from our parents buying an instrument.
Right.
These people walk around here with instruments. Their parents bought them instruments ahead of time. Not our parents. You had to really show that you was really interested in something like that before somebody be worrying about buying it for you, you know. So that's the whole deal, you know. So we have hip-hop and we have all kind of stuff without instruments. Think about it.
But some people would say that the turntable is the instrument.
Yeah.
Because people learn how to play the turntable as though it were an instrument.
But you know what's funny about it, though? And they also use stuff that they shouldn't be using. They use jazz
stuff.
Yes, they do.
You
know, what's his name? My drummer's daughter came one day to him and said, well, I heard Barry playing on this rhythm and blues record. And They say, "Oh, you ain't heard Barry." You know? She said, "I have." She got the record and played it for him. He said, "That sounds like Barry playing," you know. So he called me up and said, "Barry, is this you playing on this?" It was really Bud Powell.
Oh.
So they were using Bud Powell on a rhythm and blues record with the, you know, they, or what they do with the
sampling.
Yeah, sampling.
They sampled. Yeah.
See, that kind of thing, you know. You don't even get nothing from that.
Well, I was told that they've gotten better at it, but I guess there's still some holes in, you know, some people still aren't getting what they should.
Oh, no.
But in the beginning, no one got anything.
There you go.
I understand they're getting better at that.
But
now,
these cats, they make so much money, I don't even understand it. Lord have mercy. But they fill stadiums. They don't fill a little club. They fill a big club.
Right.
And then they'll fill the ballpark. Think about that. Well, see, one thing, we aren't given a chance at all. I say we aren't given a chance to be disliked. I would love for them to allow me to go on television just so people, if they want to dislike me, they'll dislike me.
Right.
But from hearing me, I don't want cats coming up to me. I have cats come up to me and say, "Yo, you play jazz? I hate jazz." I say, "How can you hate jazz? You ain't never heard me play. You never heard me play in your life, and yet you're going to tell me you hate me." It's really funny time. We have no television. There's not one jazz thing on television.
No, there's no variety shows either, where a place person can showcase their
art. Well, see, at least Johnny Carson, he had a big band with big jazz musicians playing in his band.
Right.
So when he quit, here come these little bands, and they be catering more to something else. I heard Letterman.
Oh, David Letterman.
You know what he did? He came out one day, the opening show, and he said, what song was that y'all played? He said, "Oh, that was a Monk song." And he said, "Never play it again."
Oh, no.
That's what he said.
Oh. Well, you've been expanding the music.
Yeah, well, I tried.
How long have you been teaching? Since when did you decide to teach?
I didn't decide.
Oh.
Maybe when I was about 14 or 15. You know, you end up knowing more than the other man. So they end up coming to you.
Right.
See, cats came to me.
Right.
I came to Tommy Flanagan, looking over his shoulder, seeing a chord here and there, where other people came and listened to me, you know. But I was more the teacher type. Tommy was more the shy and quiet kind, you know. I was the opposite. My house was open. All of them came to my house. Paul Chambers learned to play in my house.
Bass.
Joe. What's his name? The tenor player. Joe Henderson. He learned to play at my house. James Jamerson.
Now, the bassist. The Motown bassist.
He learned to play at my house. A whole bunch. So, I've been teaching all the time. You know.
And when did you start the workshops that you do in prison?
Oh, you want to really know?
Yeah.
Still, you know, like jazz organizations, we had a few organizations, but they would get money. So what they would do, they would have a workshop for a week or something in some place. There's a school on 76 or 77 off Broadway. We used to teach there. And then when we opened up the place on 58th Street between 5th and Madison, we had a place. We called it for the place in Boston, Storyville or something like that. And so their Jazz in Action was a group, Joe Newman and his wife. They had that group. And so I was teaching at the Storyville for a week. And the last day, well, see, I like to play the horses.
Horses.
Yeah, so I went to off-track betting, and I forgot I was supposed to be teaching. So I guess I was supposed to be teaching about 4 o'clock. And at 6 o'clock, I remembered I was supposed to be teaching.
You know? Oh, no.
So I ran out of the OTB and hopped in a cab, took off of the place. I got to the place. Everybody was still there waiting on me. So what I said was, "Okay, you waited for me. I will now have a class forever. And we will continue the class. You'll bring $3 or $4. You must cover the rent. And we might need a couple of musicians. You have to pay for the musicians. It's not pay me. I don't expect any money." And that's how I started. That happened in the 70s. I've had a class almost every year since the 70s. I think after the Jazz Country Theater, I might have stopped for a couple of years.
And the Jazz Cultural Theater.
We did it in 82 to 87.
Oh, okay.
So I stopped.
Now, what was the Jazz Cultural Theater, for those who may not? Is it similar to the workshops?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I made a mistake, though, with it. The first class I had in the Jazz Cultural Theater, I had about 90 people.
Wow.
And so I said, oh, boy, 90 people. Oh, I better have more classes. But see, I didn't realize those 90 people, they sort of began to pick when they were going to come to class. And so what I thought was 90 people, I'm afraid it didn't happen anymore. So I called hell with that. I've kept the class going ever since then. You know. And, you know, it's good for New York, too, you know. See, people in New York, I call it therapy class, really.
How so?
See, the singers make it to class. And you got to think of it, singers, mostly women. They're lonely people. You live in these apartment buildings. There ain't no place for no love. These people live in these buildings, they don't even know who the next door neighbor is. Detroit is a city of homes. We were not a city of apartment building. A few horn players come, a few piano players come. If I counted on the horn players and piano players, there wouldn't be no class, because I'm not going to pay for the class.
you had a trio for a long time.
Yeah.
And you had a sextet.
I've had different size groups.
Exactly. Did you?
But mostly trio now.
Okay. Is that a preference or?
Oh yeah.
Why?
Most of the horn players can't play.
No.
So I'd rather just have a trio. That's all. You know, that's what it is. Most horn players, I don't want to work with them. There's a tenor player, Charles Davis. I work with Charles.
Okay.
You know.
Well, there was one recording you did, Breaking It Up.
That
was a trio recording.
Yep.
And then it was followed by another release with Sonny Stitt.
Oh yeah, well I made quite a few with Sonny. But that's different. That's with Sonny Stitt. He can play. Use a lot of teeth. He can play.
Right.
You think these young cats here now? Get out of here. Lord have mercy, Jesus.
Well, you
Lord.
Haven't heard everybody.
No, I've heard mostly. But see, I don't even go out to meet them.
Oh.
I don't know the young people. See, I've been very fortunate in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I got to hear Charlie Parker in person.
Right. And you got to sit in with him once.
Yes. Okay. No more than once.
Okay.
I sat in with him a few times.
Okay.
He always let me sit in with him.
Okay.
Him and Gene Ammon, mm-hmm. they let me sit in with him.
Right.
And let me tell you, going to hear Charlie Parker was strange. The feeling, what I felt in my heart. I can't go to these joints because they aren't going to give me that feeling. I got to have somebody give me that feeling.
Yeah. Well, you have to go to see them, don't you
yeah,
think,
but
to find out whether you'll have the ticket.
I've been to see quite a few,
okay.
And that is very discouraging.
Can you see any way that they can sort of open up and express that feeling?
Of course, of course.
Can they learn that?
I say, maybe we can learn it. I say, we can learn it. Because, you know, I figure where now I have to give off the feeling to make you know what I'm talking about. When I play, I would have to give off the feeling to you. And then I said, well, maybe I have to give the feeling to myself. So what I have to do is picture myself over there playing, and I'm playing over here. So that I can say, maybe if I can make myself feel this, then maybe I can make somebody else feel it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think that's part of the deal. You know, most of these people, they're talking about self, but very selfishly self, you know. Not truly self, where you give on something to people. Make people know that they've been someplace. So when you go down there, you can say, well, I've been someplace, you know. You know, it's like listening to Monk play. You know, hard as he was, he'd get up and dance, jump down at the piano and just start out, no hesitation. You listen to those people play, they were real musicians, I should say.
On a Move, Tuesday, April 24th at 11 a.m. on Mamiya's 58th birthday. M1, Dead Prez, Danny Glover, Norman Frankelstein, Francis Fox Piven, and thousands of others will go to the Justice Department at 950 Pennsylvania Avenue, Washington, D.C., calling for an end to mass incarceration, the release of all U.S.-held political prisoners, the ending of solitary confinement, torture, capital punishment, and rounding up of immigrants. The murder of people of color in cold blood by the law enforcement still continues and must be stopped. It is time we demand justice from the highest branch of the law. For bus reservations, call the Free Mamiya Coalition hotline at 212-330-8029 and visit our website at freemamiya.com.
You're tuned to WBAI, the station that tells our story and tells it like it is. This is Mabel Williams, widow of Robert F. Williams, Negroes with Guns, and you're listening to WBAI, New York, 99.5 FM.
And I mean every word of it.
And that's right. You are listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM.
Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program, and I'm going to take this quick opportunity to let you know what you've been hearing. What you're listening to right now is Luminescence, the title cut of a 1967 Prestige Records release. Barry Harris on piano, Pepper Adams on baritone saxophone, Junior Cook on tenor sax, Slide Hampton on trombone, and Bob Cranshaw on bass, Lenny McBrown on drums. Before that, we heard a minor sax. Did I say that that was the Barry? This, what you're listening to now, is the Barry Harris Sextet. Okay. Before that, we heard Sonny Stitt. It's actually the Barry Harris Trio with Sonny Stitt, but it's a Sonny Stitt recording. Burnin', released in 1958 on Jazz Beat Records. Sonny Stitt on alto or tenor sax. Barry Harris on piano. William Austin on bass. And Frank Gatt on drums. Before that, we heard Bluesy, which is a song that I used in the promo, I believe. Yes. And that's the Barry Harris Trio. So that's the same lineup without Sonny Stitt, which would be Barry Harris on piano, William Austin bass, and Frank Gatt on drums. And this is from Barry Harris's debut as a leader, Breaking It Up. And it was released on Jazz Beat Records in 1958. Right after this recording, he then did the Sonny Stitt recording. That's according to the liner notes. Before that, we heard the love theme from Spartacus, Yusef Lateef from Eastern Sounds, Prestige Records, 1961. Yusef Lateef on oboe on this recording, tenor sax and flute on others, Barry Harris on piano, Ernie Farrow on bass, and Les Humphreys on drums. Before that, we heard the love theme from The Robe. Both are my favorites from the Eastern Sounds. I mean, I love the whole thing, but those are probably my top favorites. Anyway, from Eastern Sounds. And before that, we heard I Need You, which is a version of Yusef. The I Need You recording, as mentioned, was on the Lewis Hayes recording. It was written by Barry Harris. Lewis Hayes is the name of the release. VJ Records, 1960. Lewis Hayes drums, Nat Adderley cornet, Yusef Lateef tenor saxophone, Barry Harris on piano, and Sam Jones on bass. Before that, we heard Yusef from Donald Byrd. It was from First Flight, originally recorded in 1955. This is from a Delmark Records reissue that was in 1990. Donald Byrd on trumpet, Yusef Lateef on tenor saxophone, Barry Harris on piano, Bernard McKinney on euphonium, Alvin Jackson on bass, and Frank Gatt on drums. Before that, we heard Thad Jones, April in Paris, from the magnificent Thad Jones, 1956 Blue Note Records release. And, okay. And before that, we heard I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl, Nina Simone, from the very best of Nina Simone, Sugar in My Bowl, 1967, 1972, originally recorded in 1967. This is from a 1998 RCA BMG compilation. Stay tuned for more Sugar in My Bowl and Barry Harris. Coming up now. Oh, by the way, if you missed anything in all of my ramblings, the playlist is up on the sugarinmybowl.org site, sugarinmybowl, sugarinmybowl.org. And if you need to email sugarinmybowl, you can reach us at sugarinmybowl@gmail.com. Stay tuned.
thank you so much for coming back to sort of end this up.
Okay.
And it's much less distracting. There are no dishes and silverware right now.
Something about that was fun, too, though.
That's true.
With dishes at all.
Right.
In some kind of way, I don't know. That was more natural. The show was natural.
Well, that's true. And it was enjoyable because there was food as well. Food always makes things better for me.
I got to remember that kidney bean salad.
Yeah.
I got to try that.
Now, there was one thing we were talking about when we ended off in the diner about how social the music was.
Oh, yes.
And how, from what I can tell, the lack of dancing may make it less social, if I'm understanding what you're saying.
Oh, yeah, well, part of it. You know, see, what happened with us, you know, it was like a school affair, more than your single little thing. I wish what's the name was alive. He just died, too, Eddie Locke, because he always argues me down. See, we had at the Paradise Theater where the big bands used to come. They'd have an amateur hour. And so my band from my school, we went, and the band from his school went on the same amateur hour. Now, our bass player had never played the bass before. He was an alto player. But the other fellow named James Johnson, he was a better alto player, so he was going to play the alto. And so we said, Ernie, you got to play something. Ernie said, well, I'll play the bass fiddle. And so he spent the rest of his life playing the bass fiddle. And this is really true till he died. And so we went to the theater. And boy, Eddie Locke band played, and my band played. And so, like, you put your hand over your head, whatever they did, and the applause and noise and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Did it put the hand over the head and did it over me. Boy, you heard so much noise. But then when the lights came on, you could see all the green and yellow sweaters from my high school. Because, boy, everybody came out. You know, it was like, almost like he was mad till he died.
Gosh.
He insisted that his band played better than my band. My band was pretty good. But he insisted, he said, we rigged the thing. I can't help it if his people didn't back him up. My people backed me up. That was the kind of thing. You know, we'd give a dance ourselves and the high school people come to the dance, you know. And plus, we were sort of like, how can I say it? We were an integrated bunch. My school might have just been open for blacks or something, but we were integrated when it came to the music. We were very integrated.
Well, I was having a chat with a friend of mine, and we were talking about the social aspect, and he was thinking with regard to, because he's not much of a dancer, so he was thinking about Charles Mingus and how people may have been distracted in listening to the music by, you know, just being there socially, you know, clinking glasses, talking to each other, and not really paying attention to the music.
Well, you know what it is, really, like, there were certain people, Donald Byrd, you know, they wanted to play in concert halls.
Mm-hmm.
Look here, no, there was nothing better than playing in one of them bars where the workers get off from work from the factory, and they come in that bar, and, you know, they love the music. See, it wasn't just the dancing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was something else involved. It was the words, the songs. See, we had beautiful music, Embraceable You,
right.
Body and Soul, all these beautiful songs that you never hear. You never hear them on the television right today. You hear this ugly sounding guitar, and the guitar is the most beautiful sound. There's a young guitarist. I consider him the greatest guitarist in the world. I taught him when he was 11 years old, and he was good then. And he's Italian.
What's his name?
His name is Pasquale. I don't even know if he's recorded yet. I sort of talked him into I wanted him to study classical guitar, too.
Okay.
I think he's so talented that he could be great at anything that he wanted to do. But when it comes to the music, the people, you know, you play the song, the young people knew the songs. Even when Bird started playing Ornithology, the people knew that there was High High the Moon. The dancers knew that, not just us, you know. And then they put another melody on, Just You, Just Me. They see different songs, they put different melodies. See, these people are doing the songs, there aren't any songs that we can take and add. The only one I know is Stevie Wonder. See, Stevie has written a few songs that we can use, because what I'll do sometime, I'll play Isn't She Lovely, Isn't She Wonderful. See, I'll play that, and I'll play it like a jazz song. I don't play it like no rock song or no rhythm and blues song. I play it like a jazz song.
Sure.
When the break comes, I ain't gonna play what he did.
Right.
I'm gonna play something else. You know, I play an entirely different thing. you got to hear it, you know. But aren't too many people have written songs like that, and they've gotten away. See, this age, there's no form. See, they've gotten away from form. We had form to the music. First 2 8 bars. See, these things all fit into schemes. Sometime we played 16-16. there might be a song that'll be a 16-16. It'll all add up to 32. Or there's a song that's real long, it'll add up to 64. Mm. Add it up to. See, but these people, just anybody writes a song and they be talking about what they talk about. They talk about stuff that should be left in the bedroom.
Oh, goodness.
So, I mean, they're sort of terrible.
Uh-huh.
I heard women singing, beautiful sounding voices, talking about some of the nastiest stuff you want to say. But
yeah.
They're singing, they're beautiful. But, you know, they don't give us anything to hold on to help build us up. Because I know what happens. That's why I was saying about when I was talking to some friends, I say there's one song that you'll find rhythm and blues people, rock and roll people, a lot of them know this song, and it's a jazz song. I bet you don't know what that is. One disc jockey had a song that was his theme song.
Moody's Mood.
That's right.
Yeah.
That song, you'll find people that know that song
and
don't know a thing about jazz.
That's true. I mean, Frankie Crocker used it every night.
That's right. They know that song.
Right. So, they even know the words that are written.
They know the words. They can sing all the words.
Right.
Well, you know what? They are singers. I'll tell you, they're real singers because they sing everything. I just wish I could make them sing some of these beautiful things. Mm-hmm. I saw one little white girl got on one of these shows. She was the most beautiful looking young thing,
mm-hmm.
dressed so beautiful, and sang the ugliest song.
Oh, goodness.
They gave her no consideration. But it was some song, some cat had written. I say, I wonder what would have happened if she had sung something like, for heaven's sake, for heaven's sake, let's fall in love. Oh, it's these beautiful songs. It's no mistake to call it love, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We did it a different kind of way. I would have loved to have seen. I wanted to call her because I say, I wish I knew where she lived in Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Mm. Wow.
I really wish I had known where she lived because I wanted to say to her, look here, as beautiful as you are, learn all the standards you can get. Don't worry about your contemporaries. Just learn them anyway. You can be a part of your contemporary stuff, too. But learn all those songs. So one day when you get on that television, you sing one of those songs, and you'll find out. You'll get a response. Don't think that it's all young. And we aren't all young. We're old, too. We love music, too, you know.
Right.
That kind of thing.
Well, there's one singer, Christina Aguilera. I am eagerly awaiting her recording of standards. You know, I wish somebody would come to her and say, here, record these standards.
You know what? If I knew it, I would be the one you say, give me her number. Why don't you record some standards, damn
right.
it? And damn it, record some standards. You know, that's what we need. I was so shocked. I'll tell you one shock that's hit me recently and made me aware that there really is something wrong with us right now. Tony Bennett did a thing with Lady Gaga.
Right.
And you know what? They did a jazz thing. They did The Lady is a Tramp.
Right, the duets.
She does it like crap games with barons and earls.
I won't go to Harlem in diamonds and pearls. Rest of those girls.
Thank you. That's why the lady is a tramp.
I love the free, fresh wind in my hair.
Life without care.
Oh, I'm so broke.
It's oak.
I hate California. It's crowded and damn.
That's why the lady is a tramp.
Lady Gaga, she can sing. I was so shocked. Because I considered her the lowest with all this funny, phony stuff, a steak dress.
Yeah, I think it's just the theatrics that unfortunately
distract. Yeah,
you
know, that upset me.
Right.
But then to hear her get with Tony Bennett and sing that Lady is a Tramp and really sing it, I was so shocked. I'll have to leave Lady Gaga alone. I'll be mad at her anyway because she's doing what she's doing.
Right.
I don't like it.
Right.
But it really shocked. I don't even know what to think.
Well, tell me about the time that when you were involved with the Bird soundtrack with Clint Eastwood in the film Bird, what was that like?
That was beautiful. I can't even tell you. You know, I've got it around here somewhere. I just don't know what it all. See, most people have small spaces to mess up, you know? I happen to have a large space, and I messed up the whole space. I don't know where to find nothing. No, really, no. Really, if it came down to it, I might could find it. A boy sent me some pictures of Jameson, the bass player.
James Jameson.
At my house. you know, and I was playing, you know, and I don't know what I did with the pictures. I tell people these things and they say, oh, you know, what did he talk about? I had one, they say, no, Paul Chambers learned to play in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, my foot.
Yeah.
Paul Chambers got a bass fiddle and came to a gig in Detroit and couldn't even play. Didn't know a thing about the bass, but tried to play anyway. And so he used to come to my house every day. But I say these things. Everybody could tell you one pianist, you know what one pianist's mother told him?
What's that?
She came to a concert, and we all played a concert with UB Blake, you know?
Mm-hmm, yes.
And we played this concert, I think it was at Carnegie Hall. We played this concert, Dorsey Donegan, Ceta Walton, Harold Meebor, a bunch of us. Mm-hmm. And then the star was UB Blake.
Okay.
So one of these piano players' mother told him, you know what she told him?
What's
she,
that?
She said, son, you all right, but you ain't no Barry Harris.
Oh.
So I used to say, I wonder if that really happened. You know, when you get a certain age, you start doubting some of the things. I wonder if that really happened, or am I making this thing up?
Well, you played bass fiddle for a second, didn't you?
My bass playing was that so limited. I played that in high school with the orchestra.
Oh, okay.
Well, what happened was this boy's mother, he came into a joint where I was playing a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing he said was, my mama said, I wasn't no Barry Harris.
Oh.
A piano player, you know.
Uh-huh.
It was really funny, though, you know, all my life.
Well, let's go back to the Bird soundtrack, because we didn't really talk about that.
That Bird soundtrack, the only thing I can tell you, it was a beautiful experience.
How did you wind up? Did Clint Eastwood contact you, too?
Oh, yeah, a lot of musicians. He contacted a lot of jazz musicians. We all did part of it, you know. It was quite a few of us. Walter Bishop, Walter Davis, Monty Alexander.
Yes.
Ray Brown was part of it.
Ray Brown. Yes, he was.
But I don't even... who would they say is on it?
Okay, so Ron Cotter, was the other bassist that played on it. Walter Davis Jr. was on piano. John Geerin was on drums. Let me see if somebody you played with. Chuck Berghofer was on bass.
Oh, yeah, that was probably part of the West Coast, those bassists.
John Geerin on drums. And
I don't know those names.
That was on Parker's Mood.
Oh, yeah. That's the one I like.
Yeah, that's the one I'll be playing.
Thank you.
you saw the movie, when they had gave the credits at the end of the movie,
mm-hmm.
what was playing was Parker's move, and it was me playing the piano.
That's right.
Lord have mercy. That was the most beautiful sound, this stuff. I got a chance to play with Bird again.
Yeah, right? With his horn. Because they used the original horn.
Yeah. I said, oh, boy. It was a gas because Clint, even after that, we gave a thing here in New York where we had to wear tuxedos and everything. Clint Eastwood really grabbed my hand because I had gotten one of the little things of champagne, you know. He grabbed my hand, all that champagne fell all over my hand.
Oh, goodness.
He was so glad to see me because it gave him a chance to get away from the photographers and things, you know.
Right.
So we really became friends, and it's so funny. He came to a concert of mine, one of my big concerts.
Oh, great.
I used to give a big concert with children.
Actually, tell me about that before we forget.
Oh, boy. You know what? I gave about 20 concerts in New York. I never asked for money. I financed it myself. I saved my money, and I give the concert. It cost me about $20,000. I'd have children from every borough. I had teachers teaching children my songs. And then I had, on the stage, was a big band, about a 12 to 20-piece string section.
Wow.
In the middle was the chorus of about, my highest chorus was about 80, a chorus of 80. Conductor was in the middle along with the piano and my drummer. We were like a trio stuck in between all this.
Wow.
And then sometimes these little children would come out, I tell you. You should hear these little children sing.
How did you decide which children would be involved? How did you select?
I let any children be involved. Any teacher that wanted to be a part of it with their children. They would bust in from Brooklyn, from the Bronx. I had a teacher in the Bronx teaching. See, I had... It all started just like that, because one teacher, what was his name, Lenny Azzarello, he had started teaching in a high school, a singing chorus thing, and he had never been able to get the chorus to sing. I mean, that's like half the semester is over, and he couldn't get the chorus to sing. Can you imagine?
Oh, my goodness, no. Oh, my goodness.
He told me about it. He said, Barry, it was a school over in Brooklyn. I don't know which one it was, and, I told him, I say, you know, talk to him, man. Give him some of these jazz songs we got with the lyrics. Give them to him. Because a friend of mine used to write lyrics to jazz songs in Detroit, and I had some of it. And Sheila Jordan, we both knew these things.
Mm.
Sheila Jordan is from Detroit, too.
Oh, okay.
And Sheila Jordan used to be in this trio, two boys and herself.
Mm-hmm.
And then one boy named Skeeter, he wrote all these lyrics to these songs.
Right.
And so we took some, so he went and tried to show them one of the jazz songs. You know what happened?
What happened?
They loved it.
Oh, great.
And so what happened? I said, you kidding me? He said, man, I got them to sing. I said, you joking. I said, well, what we'll do, we'll put them on the concert. It was a high school group, too. This was a high school group. I said, okay, we'll put them on the concert. And, you know, we put them on the concert. They came in. We made sure they had flowers for all of them, you know. They came in. Now, being high school students, what I did, I say, well, they have to leave at the end of their first half, of this, you know. Mm-hmm. So we got to end with them in the first half so they can go on back to Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't leave.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, you messing with some teenagers, and they say they ain't going to leave. They ain't going to leave. But the parents got mad because no parent came with them.
Oh, no.
No. They so jive, the parents.
Oh, no.
I've even had little kids, 6 and 7 years old, be in the chorus. I had one little boy, a little black boy from Brooklyn. He learned every word to every song. He could sing all the stuff. And you know what? Years later, maybe not that long later, we had to go over to the school, and I saw this little boy sitting on the steps, barely talking, barely saying anything.
Mm-hmm.
Something. That's that little boy.
Wow.
It was so
good.
I went to this school. The little kids would be running through the hall and say, Barry Harris is here. Barry Harris is here. I mean, an elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
See, the parents are terrible. Even gave a concert with the children, and I went to the school.
Mm-hmm.
No parents came. Only one parent came.
Oh, no.
You know, and then I went to the graduation.
Uh-huh.
All the parents were there.
Oh.
I said, now, you know.
Well, they could have come to the performance.
They did not come.
Oh.
They did not come. I said, now, well, what you going to do with parents like this?
Yeah.
See, so the parents are faulty a lot. The kids are influenced by their contemporaries.
Exactly.
You got to show them some kind of thing so that whatever you show them has got to be stronger than what them contemporaries come up with.
Exactly.
And if the parent ain't right, then what's the child? The child, they going to be like the street then.
Yeah.
That's our problem today.
Sure.
You know, the musicians aren't muggers. Musicians don't mug people. There's no way they're supposed to take instruments out of schools. I think that's disgraceful. I mean, there are a lot of things you cut away. All these senators with their what they give to this foundation, they all steal the money. That money we got instruments rotting in places in New York City. Imagine such a thing.
Sure, just rusting away.
Yeah, just rusting away. That's sort of ridiculous.
It is. Now, I have a question, though, with regard to your most recent recording, Live in Rennes.
Yeah.
Nascimento.
Yeah.
Right now, we'd like to play our theme song. Our theme song is a little song called Nascimento. You are supposed to participate with the song, too. You must learn the melody. We're going to karaoke again. So that by the time I play about the second chorus, you know the melody. It goes like this. That's easy. Drums. Feel it. Smile. Wow. bass fiddle, Matthews. On piano, Barry Harris. Thank you very much.
Fun song.
Oh no, it's, we have a ball with that song all over the world.
Is that no, okay.
It's for my Nascimento. He's okay. Another cat. He's from Brazil.
Okay, it's not Milton Nascimento.
Oh, this is a cat who tall cat. He plays a tall drum.
Oh.
Plays it with a mallet. I wish you'd been at my birthday party. See, my birthday party was in a restaurant on 9th Avenue and 50th Street, I think it was.
Oh, you'll have to invite me next time.
Oh, yeah, my birthday party, for the last 30, 40 years, my birthday party is like an annual affair.
Oh, well, now that I'm invited, I guess I can come.
Yeah, anybody can come. I had people come up to me I'd never seen in my life. Hey, where your birthday party going to be this year? You have to see. This cat came in, Nascimento came, and he brought his drum. And, boy, I could see why I love him. Or why I named it after him. You should have heard him play when I played Nascimento.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. He's, oh. No, it's not for Milton.
Okay. Okay. I had to ask because I
don't mind people thinking that, you know. But no, it's not. It's for a little drummer that came from Brazil. So play the tall drum. That's all.
So by the time this airs, you will have been honored.
Yep.
But it seems like you're working.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's funny. They're honoring me up in Mount Vernon at a church up in Mount Vernon. And then Monday, they're doing a special tribute to Clark Terry. It's all to be a benefit, like. And then Wednesday, I'm playing at the St. Peter's Church from 1 to 2 for the afternoon crowd. And then Friday, I go to teach in Toronto.
Oh, my goodness.
This is special time right now. But don't think it happens all every time. It doesn't.
Oh, okay.
It's a busy week, and I'll end up with a few hundred dollars. That's all. It ain't as if I'm going to end up with a half a million.
Oh, no.
Not nothing like that. You know, I want to fulfill. I could fill Yankee Stadium. Mm-hmm. If I could have all the children who have been in my choruses, in my children's chorus over the 20 years, and if I had all the singers who had been a part of me in 20 years, I'll tell you, maybe I could almost fill the stadium. Wow. I've had so many. And I've had different schools. And I've had children from... I've done this concert in Milwaukee. I had the most beautiful thing set up in Milwaukee. Because you know what? The seniors, the singer, my senior choir, was practicing in a synagogue and a Baptist church. Now, you know,
wow.
You talk about some together stuff. You had to see this. The synagogue, they practice, and then we go to the Baptist church and practice the next day. And the children came from all over. And then when I tried to get some strings, I had to end up going to the high school, and I got string players from the high schools. The big band was composed of all the professional, a lot of professional jazz musicians in Milwaukee.
Oh.
We did a whole big concert. I'm surprised we never did it again. Because we had everybody. The mayor was involved. Everybody was involved in this thing. I'm surprised we never got a chance to do it in another city, you know. Except Toronto is the only place I've been able to do it. And the thing about it is, most of these children that I get in Toronto, they're underprivileged children. I never knew that Toronto had so many underprivileged children.
Now I'm very used to it, and I've been doing it since I was little. Has it built up your confidence?
Yeah, a lot. These are the things
we need. It's music to the ears of those involved in the DARE Arts Foundation, a program aimed at empowering at-risk Toronto youth through music.
The music goes through my heart, and that makes me a little feel happy.
It's considered one of the most innovative arts education programs, and it includes something unique.
Go one more time. Hey.
Jazz legend Barry Harris.
He brings the oomph in the jazz festival.
It's hard to get recognition of yourself, but see, this way, they get a little shot. And it does things to them. I've had students stop stuttering. I've had bad boys become good boys. I mean, all this kind of stuff happens.
When they met him, it was, wow, this guy is cool and he knows all about music, and it was, music really came alive for them.
About 10,000 students take part in the DARE Arts program every year, and like many other students, these ones here have gained valuable leadership skills simply through singing and dancing. At the Toronto Center for the Arts, Andrea Puno, City News Tonight.
So do community centers approach you?
The schools.
Okay.
The schools love to be a part of something. It helps children. I got one little girl, she'll probably end up being a great singer. I say she might have started out being 12 years old, so now she's about 15 or 16. And beautiful little Indian girl, you'd be surprised. She was the one who learned the song so well that she led the children.
Wow.
And so every time we give a concert, she comes. You know, it's really, really unbelievable.
Well, there's one thing I want to mention. You mentioned the Clark Terry fundraiser.
Yeah.
It's going to be tomorrow, April 23rd at 7 p.m. at St. Peter's Church.
Yeah, St. Peter's, right.
The Jazz Church.
Yeah.
619 Lexington Avenue. And that's going to be in honor of Clark Terry. And it's put on by the Jazz Foundation of America.
Yeah. And Lexington Avenue and 54th Street.
Yes.
You didn't say that.
Yes, thank you.
Because they need to know what street is at.
Yes, they need the cross streets.
It's going to be a gas because, you know.
I understand that. I mean, that's quite a lineup of people who are going to be there. Lou Donaldson's going to be there. You're going to be there, of course.
Yeah.
Russell Malone, speaking of great guitarists, is going to be there.
I'm going to try to get the choir there, too.
Okay.
So if you get there, all of a sudden you might hear singing from all around the room.
Excellent.
That's what I do. You know, the last concert, I was at the Vanguard.
Mm-hmm. The Village Vanguard, right.
On the Sunday when I'm there, my choir comes in and they sit at the side and they sing. I make them sing. And then what happened the last one, somebody called me on Sunday and said, oh, look, can you give me four seats to the concert? I said, okay, sure.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to call the people and say, look here, so-and-so is coming, so we better get four seats. And they said, okay, we'll do that. So all of a sudden, here we are, the chorus is in there for the second set. Everybody's set up, and in comes this man with his party. He comes in, and I started the chorus singing Embraceable You. He comes up on the stage, and he sings Embraceable You with the chorus. The man was Tony Bennett.
Oh, my goodness.
Tony Bennett singing with the chorus in the background.
Wow.
It was so beautiful. I can't even tell you.
Well, I also noticed that Jimmy Heath's going to be at the Clark Terry tribute.
Oh, yeah, a lot of people will be
and
there.
And as a matter of fact, I saw you with Jimmy Heath at Flushing Town Hall.
Oh, you were there?
That's where I got your phone number.
Oh, yeah. We got it together. We do that every year, too.
Yeah, I think it's a Jazz Masters concert. It was you, Frank West,
yeah, all,
Jimmy
all,
Heath.
All old Jazz Masters.
Right.
You know, I used to be able to say, oh, I play with a lot of older musicians. I say, either older or younger. Well, suddenly, I am that old musician.
Well, we really appreciate your being around, Barry Harris.
But I have a gas of a time. See, I tell everybody, my whole family is 80. My brother, my sister, they older than me.
Uh-huh.
And my wife is a little older. And her sister is in the 80s, too. She's a little behind me. That's the youngest.
Okay.
They're all 80.
Well, on the subject of receiving a Jazz Master, when did you receive? Do you remember when?
My Jazz Master?
Yeah.
Oh, in 1989.
Wow.
I was surprised because I looked at some of these people receiving the award. I said, damn, I received that award in 1989. I wish they'd give me that extra $5,000. We only got $20,000.
Oh, I see.
They're giving $25,000. Now, I'm angry.
It's like they owe you $5,000.
They owe me $5,000. I want my $5,000.
And your mule.
That's right. Yeah, that would help, too. And my 40 acres.
Right.
That's all I want.
Oh, Barry Harris, thank you so much for joining Sugar in My Bowl. I really appreciate your chatting with us some more.
Emily, thank you very much for calling me in. I hope some young people hear us and might want to come say, who is Barry Harris? I want to see what he played like. That's the only thing I ask. Please allow me a chance to prove to you that I can play, or allow me a chance to be disliked by you.
Right.
Please allow me that privilege. Thank you, though.
Thank you, Barry Harris.
Talk to you soon.
All right. Peace.
It's yours. Peace.
All right. Well, that was Barry Harris joining Sugar in My Bowl. My name's Joyce Jones, by the way. And what you're listening to right now is Bullseye. This is the Barry Harris Sextet. This is the title cut. It is from a 1968 Prestige Records release arranged by Barry Harris. It's also written by Barry Harris. Everything in the second hour, pretty much. Well, yeah, pretty much, except for Parker's Mood, was written by Barry Harris. That's Barry Harris on piano, Paul Chambers on bass, Billy Higgins on drums, Kenny Durham on trumpet, Charlie McPherson on tenor saxophone, Pepper Adams on baritone saxophone. Before that, we heard Nascimento. It is not about Milton Nascimento, but Barry Harris's drummer friend. And that was the Barry Harris Trio, live from Wren's. And that is a 2010 Plus Loin Music release. Okay. I'm going to have to... Oh, yeah, there it is. Barry Harris on piano, Matthias Alemán on bass, and Felipe Serra on drums. Before that, we heard Parker's Mood, Charlie Parker. It's from the Bird original soundtrack, 1988 Columbia Records release. Charlie Parker on alto sax. Barry Harris on piano. Chuck Berghofer on bass. John Gearin on drums. Before that, we heard Bish Bash Bosh. That is the Barry Harris Trio from Chasing the Bird, 1962 Prestige Records release. Barry Harris on piano, Bob Cranshaw on bass, Clifford Jarvis on drums. Before that, as was stated earlier, Luminescence, that's the title cut from a 1967 Prestige Records release arranged by Barry Harris, the Barry Harris Sextet. Barry Harris on piano, Pepper Adams baritone saxophone, Junior Cook on tenor saxophone, Slide Hampton on trombone, Bob Cranshaw on bass, and Lenny McBrown on drums. Coming up next is La Nueva Alternativa, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Before we go, though, I should mention again the fundraiser for Clark Terry tomorrow at the Jazz Church at St. Peter's, the Jazz Church. I just had the information. It's not on that tab. Okay. Yes, the Jazz Church is 53rd and Lexington. Oh, blast. Gosh. You know, I had it. I did. See, that's why more windows are needed when you're doing things, instead of trying to do it all in one window. But go to jazzfoundation.org that you'll be able to get information about that, since they are the ones that are doing this. And also, what do we have going on here? There's a fun drive. Next time Sugar My Bowl is back, it will be during the fun drive. The spring drive is coming up on May 2nd. So, you know, we'll be... Oh, there it is. Jazz Foundation. Come on, come on, come on. There we go. It is tomorrow at 7 p.m., St. Peter's Church, 619 Lexington Avenue. And that is near 53rd Street. There is a donation because it is a fundraiser, but, you know, it's for Clark Terry, and he deserves it. And you will also be treated with the company of varying musicians, Marcus Belgrave, including Marcus Belgrave, Valerie Capers, Sylvia Cuenca, Lou Donaldson, Mark Elf, Don Friedman, Wynette Harper, Jimmy Heath, Louis Hayes. Louis Hayes, we heard from him earlier. Melba Joyce, fabulous singer. Russell Malone, fabulous guitarist. Junior Mance, Jimmy Owens, Jeremy Pelt. Oh my gosh, you should just come. And Frank West, we mentioned him earlier. Helen Sung, she was on the Mosaic Project with Terry Lynn Carrington, the Grammy-winning Mosaic Project. Stay tuned for La Nueva Alternativa, coming up next. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
Hello? Bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.